this episode of the Fisheries Podcast, I speak with Dr. Mamie Parker about her experiences working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and what she is doing now that she is retired. Joining me, I am Nick Kramer, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod or on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. Today's episode will sound a little different as it is the first interview I've recorded in person with the guest. I was fortunate enough to have a great guest be one of our plenary speakers at the Kansas Natural Resource Conference, and I couldn't miss the opportunity to interview the person or to try out my new interview gear. So there is a little hustle and bustle in the background and the occasional very loud squeaky bellhop cart, but I hope that you are able to enjoy my interview with perhaps one of the more amazing and inspiring people in the field of fisheries, Dr. Mamie Parker. Mamie is the former Assistant Director of Fisheries and Habitat Conservation at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Prior to this position, she made history when she was appointed the first African-American Fish and Wildlife Service Regional Director of the 13 Northeastern States. Dr. Parker has an extensive amount of experience as a fish and wildlife biologist and an executive. She has worked in La Crosse, Madison, and Lake Mills, Wisconsin, Columbia, Missouri, New London, and Minneapolis, Minnesota, Atlanta, Georgia, Hadley, Massachusetts, and Washington, D.C. She served as the Ecosystem Coordinator in the Great Lakes and Big Rivers region and worked in many programs including the National Fish Hatcheries, National Wetlands and Coastal Mapping, Contaminants, Invasive Species, Marine Mammals, Wetland Restoration, and Protection Programs, among others. Mamie was designated the authorized official for the negotiations with General Electric Corporation to clean up the Hudson River and played a major role in helping to protect our nation's waters from the invasive species such as Asian carp and snakehead. This extensive amount of experience led her to receiving the annual Ira Gabrielson Award given by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to the most outstanding leader. The President of the United States presented Dr. Parker with the Presidential Rank Award, the highest award given to government employees. She is an author in the American Fisheries Society's book entitled The Future of Fisheries. And in 2016, Mamie received the American Fisheries Society's Emmeline Moore Prize for the Promotion of Diversity in the Profession. Welcome to the podcast, Mamie.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited about the opportunity to talk about fisheries, and congratulations on your podcast.
Thank you. This is my first time recording in person, so hopefully it goes well and we don't have any hiccups with it. But when I was preparing for this interview, I read that your mother wanted to name you after President Eisenhower, but you came out as a girl, so she settled for Mamie. Have you made any plans to visit the Eisenhower Library while you're in Kansas?
I don't have an opportunity because I'm leaving here, headed back to Arkansas, but it's on my list of places to go. I have been to Pennsylvania, where they had a farmhouse out there, and I had a chance to visit that a couple of times near Gettysburg. And I'm excited to be returning to Arkansas because that's where it all started for me, but also it was on his birthday that I was born. And of course, as you said, my mother was really impressed with the fact that Eisenhower had sent troops into Arkansas to escort the girls and boys into the segregated Little Rock Central High School. So it's good to be in the wonderful state of Kansas. Mm-hmm.
So your childhood, as you mentioned, it took place in a small town of Wilmot, Arkansas, where your mother raised you and your siblings while she worked as a sharecropper. And then you were one of the first to attend an integrated school in that area. What was it like growing up in that era that, to me, just seems like a period of time written in textbooks? And how did those experiences mold you into the Mamie that people know today?
So as I reflect on those years, you're right, my mother had five boys and five girls, and then I was born. And, yeah, she did work the fields, and that's why you have lots of kids in farmland, so they can work the fields. But eventually integration was about to come to our hometown, and you're right. It was amazing because many parents had fought for integration, but then when it happened, they were afraid to send their kids to the schools because they didn't want them to be lonesome. Pioneers are very lonesome people. And so it was kind of difficult, but my mother decided that she was going to send me to the school. But those days were not as bad as I look back on them as they could have been, and they prepared me for the Mamie that I am. In fact, I always talk about this little Paula Spurlock. She was a girl in my third grade class. I integrated a third grade class in my high school, in my elementary school, and she reached out to me and made me feel included. In fact, she made a statement. I was sniffing in one day, and she thought I was crying, and so she came up to me and she said, "It'll be all right." And it's people like that that made it more tolerable. And while I have some memories of bad things that happened, I try to make sure that I remember the good things that happened as well.
So your childhood, or I guess another part of your childhood, was fishing trips with your mother. Was this where your interest in fish took hold?
Yes, yes, yes. So my mom, she really, really was concerned about how she could spend some time with me and also take care of some of her personal needs. And she was an avid angler, a great gardener, and I tell people she was a good botanist as well with an 8th grade education. And so it was her taking me out at an early age with her, just because we didn't have babysitters when I was growing up. So I just started, with her out there, and over time I got an interest and caught the bug to learn to fish but also learn a lot about life. My mother was there to teach me a lot about life on those banks of Bayou Bartholomew and Lake Enterprise in southern Arkansas and northern Louisiana.
All right, so that love of fishing eventually led you to Arkansas Pine Bluff, where you were eventually recruited to the Fish and Wildlife Service. And during your tenure there, you worked in nearly a dozen different field stations. Do you have one that you enjoyed more than the others?
I loved all of the fish and wildlife stations that I had a chance to work in. And I was fortunate to be able to work both in fisheries as well as in ecological services. And it's always good to be able to blend those two, because a lot of times people that are, that were actually doing conservation on the ecological services side did not realize the material that they needed and the data and the research that in many cases came from the fisheries management people on the other side of the equation. I also had a chance to work at a national fish hatchery, a couple of national fish hatcheries. And again, realizing the value of propagating fish and helping to restore some of the species, recover some of the species, was really important too. So if I chose a favorite one, I'd probably get in trouble because I still get a chance to go back to a lot of those field stations. I tell you, the one that had the most influence on my life was probably the first one, because that one was in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Well, actually, Genoa National Fish Hatchery and the HELP Lab there in Genoa, Wisconsin, right up near the Mississippi River. And the reason I think it's important, because when we talk about retention and whether or not people stay in professions, your first job really will determine whether or not you're going to stay there for the rest of your career in that field. And working there, I found some great people that they were very supportive, they were very knowledgeable, and they gave me an opportunity to grow.
And then working in 10 different stations, I'm sure you've been involved or witnessed a lot of amazing projects. I guess I told you I wouldn't ask about any specific projects, but are there any that still stand out in your head today?
So I would say, yes, what stands out most for me was probably what happened at the end of my career in Fish and Wildlife Service, and that was developing the National Fish Habitat Action Plan. And it was because it was bringing together partners from academia, from federal, state, and local governments, as well as the private sector, to look at a holistic approach to conserving fisheries resources in this country. So that plan was really, really the highlight of my career, and a good way for me to leave federal government, knowing that deep down inside that there were some action plans related to fisheries.
All right. And as you kind of just hinted at, you've since retired. What have you been doing in the meantime to stay busy, and have you had more time to go fishing again?
So I'll answer the fishing question first. I'm looking forward to it. I live in the Washington, D.C. area in Northern Virginia, and I do have plans and get a chance to go fishing. I'm looking forward to doing some rock fishing in the Chesapeake Bay area this spring and summer. I don't fish as often as I'd like to. I live near the Potomac River, which when I do get to go, there's some great bass fishing in that river, which is amazing because a lot of people don't know that. Shad fishing, yes, I get a chance to do not as much as I'd like to, but I don't think most anglers get a chance to do as much fishing as they'd like to. But what I have done is somewhat changed my focus to really serve as a sterling silver role model for girls that may have an interest in science but don't know quite what to do with it. Some of them may have an interest in the outdoors but don't know about careers in the outdoors. So I've done a lot of workshops, organized a lot of workshops, brought a lot of people together to talk about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, but I call mine Wild STEM, so they can really learn about wildlife and STEM. And so we've done workshops pretty much all over the country. That has really, really inspired me to figure out ways to touch the non-traditional young ladies and girls that may have not been exposed to people in professions like the fisheries profession. I believe that that's the solution to our problems. Children will help us solve some of our natural resource problems. The earlier we get them, the better off we're going to be. In fact, they say kids are like sponges from the age of 0 to 3. And we've been working with junior high kids, but now I'm looking to think maybe we need to go even at a lower age so we can make sure that they overcome many of their fears and challenges associated with working in the outdoors.
All right, Mamie, well, now the tough part of the interview is over as we are down to the final 5 questions. And this is a group of 5 questions I ask each of the guests that come on the show. And we always start real simple with, what is your favorite fish?
So I'll have to be honest with you. I am a walleye person. Before I moved to Wisconsin, I didn't know a lot about walleye because in Arkansas, we fish for bass and catfish and bowfin, in fact. But having a chance to fish in Wisconsin, I'd say I'm moving to walleye.
All right, and you've had a long career, long successful career, and you're on to new adventures now. But do you have a favorite memory from your career so far?
I would say that my favorite memories are the opportunities that I got. I started my career as a GS-2, I believe, at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, one of the lowest grades you can get, and then moving up to becoming a senior executive service and the head of fisheries in this country. All of the positions were great. Memories are the ones where I got a chance to go and visit fisheries biologists out there working hard to make sure that they protect and recover aquatic species.
All right. And the next question is usually, what is your dream job or dream location?
My dream job.
If you were able to do it all over again.
If I could do it all over again, what would I want to do? That's a hard question. Maybe have a cooking show on fish and wildlife, cooking fish and wildlife on a television show. The Oprah of the outdoors.
There you go. I think that's the title for the episode. If money was not an issue, what is one project that you would like to work on or see put into effect?
So if money were not an object, I would hope that we would have enough resources to really focus on recovering some of the species that that we haven't had a chance to spend resources on. If money were not an issue, I think we need to really deal with the invasive species problems in this country, particularly aquatic invasive species. I'm concerned that we've spent a lot of time on imperiled species and endangered species. And and that we need to look out in the future and realize Asian carp, a lot of the other aquatic non-native species can really negate all of that we've put into in terms of trying to recover imperiled species.
All right, and then finally, if there is one point or one principle that you could have programmed in everyone's head, what would it be?
So, you know, my motto is always keep going and growing. And I'm all about excellence and looking for ways, realizing that none of us are perfect, but we all should be striving to be better. So making our best better.
Well, Mamie, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure hearing about you and the work you've done in the past and in the present. If people want to find out more information or get a hold of you, what would be the best way to do that?
So my website is mamieparker.com. My email address is mamie@mamieparker.com, or I named my website is after my mother's name because she meant a lot to me. So Ma Parker and Associates, that's the name of my business.
And if you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at fisheriespod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or old-fashioned email feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. At this time, there still isn't a guest lined up for the next episode. Regardless, you can tune in and download and subscribe on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 24th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, keep going and growing, and make your best better.